When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show. Tim McMaster here. Opening day is just days away. Thanks for joining us. The show will be returning to 5 days a week all season long. That starts today, so make us your go-to podcast for baseball news with an incredible lineup of baseball writers that we have here at the Athletic Baseball Show. And every Monday, it's myself and, of course, Ken Rosenthal answering your mailbag questions. Thanks for getting in a bunch of them for this week. We actually had so many that I'm going to save some for down the road a little bit, some of the evergreen ones. So as we record on this Sunday afternoon, Ken, the transactions continue, and they continue quickly. Sean Manaea going to the Padres early on Sunday. The Mets and the Yankees are making a trade. That never happens. We had the pre-lockout frenzy that last week. Then we had the frenzy of stuff coming out of the lockout. Now it's actually opening day week, and it's like winter meetings 3.0, right?
It is, Tim, and I've got to tell you, I'm exhausted, and the season hasn't even started yet.
No, that's not true. I'm not exhausted. But it has been a very interesting offseason, to say the least. And you're right, it's not done yet. This week is usually one in which we do see extensions. It's not unusual, because teams and players are racing to get things done before opening day. But we're also seeing trades, other kinds of transactions as well. And Rick Hahn, the White Sox GM, put it very well the other day. He said, "I consider the offseason to end on opening day." Now, it won't really even end then, because we're going to have arbitration hearings stretching perhaps into July. But for the most part, that's the way this offseason has gone. And as we get ready for the week ahead, the two big things to watch for, at least two big things that I know are pending, I don't maybe know other things that might be pending, would be the Aaron Judge and Jose Ramirez extensions. Now, as of Sunday afternoon, early Sunday afternoon, when we're taping this, neither is close, and perhaps neither will get done. But I would expect, come opening day, we're going to have, maybe even on that day, some big news. So yes, it's been a very unusual offseason, and now we're getting ready for a very unusual start to the season. And I will say this right out of the gate: I am quite worried about injuries in April. And when I say that, I am reflecting the concerns of executives and coaches and managers and players throughout the game. This has been a shortened spring training. We saw what happened in 2020 with a quick ramp up. It's a concern, to say the least. And that's going to be something to watch at the start of the season.
The Mets are certainly already feeling it, right? Jacob DeGrom is going to be out for a little while, had the MRI. Max Scherzer possibly going to miss opening day. And that's the big 1-2 punch for that team with the huge budget that's come around. So, yeah, we're certainly already feeling it. And Scherzer was a guy who was in incredible shape, supposedly, came into camp and was already ramping it up to big-time pitch limits through the early going. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure. Plenty of concerns there. We're going to give our predictions for the season at the end of the podcast, but between now and then, let's get to the mailbag.
Hey, this is Ken. I'm not available right now. Please leave a voicemail.
All right, you know the way to get to us by now. If you want to call us, it's 646-543-7072. You can leave a voicemail, or you can email the show, tabaseballshow@gmail.com. And we are going to start with a voicemail. Good amount of voicemails this week. Love to see that. This first one's coming from Lee.
Hey, Ken, Tim. My name is Lee. I'm a Braves fan. I just had a quick question. One of the things that I've noticed is that some prospects, some rookies, even some new-to-the-team debuts, on opening day have gone really, really well. I'm reminded of Jason Hayward's first home run with the Braves on opening day. My question for you is, who can we look for to have an incredible opening day around the league? Thanks.
Lee, that's a really difficult one to answer. I am hardly good at predictions as it stands, and really, I'm not very good at predicting things that might happen on a given day. I don't know that anyone in baseball is, but it's an interesting question because, as you note, Jason Hayward, when he made his debut, I don't know when that year was, but that was very exciting when he hit that home run on opening day. So I guess you're asking which rookie perhaps will shine on opening day, and I'll give you two. Just from impressions I've gotten following the sport, watching what has been going on, Julio Rodriguez from the Mariners, very exciting player. He has not made the team yet. I don't see how he does not make the team, but he's a guy that will be a shining light in the sport once he gets here, and I believe once he becomes established as a star. The other is Bobby Witt Jr. Now, again, we don't know if he's making the team at this moment either. I expect that he will, but you never know. And he, too, has all kinds of ability. These are two of the top prospects in baseball. So I'll give you those two to start with. And, of course, I'm sure something else will happen on opening day, and it will shock us all.
All right, the next question is related, but kind of broadens things a little bit beyond the rookies. It comes all the way from Edinburgh, Scotland. He actually put the pronunciation in there to make sure I said Edinburgh correctly. It is from Caleb Thomas. He says, love the podcast. It was really interesting to hear all the preparation and hard work that goes into covering spring training. Purely based on what you've seen during spring training, Ken, do you have any breakout picks or any players in particular that you think will surprise us this season? Have a great day. Keep up the great work.
Well, Caleb, the two I just mentioned, Rodriguez and Witt, but they're not really surprising choices. But I'll give you one other. And I've been in Arizona for about the last 10 days. And this guy, who I'm going to mention, is going to be the Mariners' fifth starter. He is someone who has had a monster spring. The scouts are drooling over him. And his name is Matt Brash. He is someone to watch for sure. He is a guy that, again, is young and a rookie, and you don't know what's going to be of him. But at the same time, he has been so impressive this spring, right-handed pitcher. He's made the rotation. He's a guy that I think, yes, is someone to watch a potential breakout simply based on everything we've heard. He was in high A and double A last year, big-time strikeout rate. We'll see.
All right, we go from Edinburgh, Scotland to Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. This one from Mike Patton. He says, hey guys, I have a question about the new designated hitter rule, which is commonly being called the Ohtani rule. Here's what I understand. A player can start the game as the pitcher in DH. He can be removed from the game as a pitcher, yet remain in the game as the DH. So here's my question. Can a player start as the DH only and then late in the game be brought in as a pitcher? I can see this scenario happening if the Angels make the playoffs, if they want to go to Ohtani late in the game for relief.
This is a really good question, and I am not strong on rules. In fact, I would say it's one of my weaknesses. I kind of get confused often. So when I get confused, which is often, I consult my personal rules expert, who happens to be the best in the world at this and many other things, Jason Stark. So I said to Jason, is this possible? Can, as you suggest, have the Ohtani rule essentially work in reverse? A player start the game as a DH and then be brought in as a pitcher. Jason went to the rule, went to the specific wording, and said, no. The rule specifically refers to the starting pitcher who can do both. And as Jason put it, it's not the Michael Lorenzen rule, it's the Ohtani rule. Now, Michael Lorenzen is going to start for the Angels this year, but you know what Jason's saying. The rule is not for relievers, it's for starters. And then Jason added, this is probably too much information, but here we go. I do think there's a possible weird flaw in the rule. If Lorenzen pinch hit for Ohtani for some reason, and then Joe Maddon wanted him to go in and pitch, what would happen? Would the Angels lose their DH, but Lorenzen would be in that spot in the lineup? I just confused myself. That's what Jason told me. And I thought at that moment, well, maybe we should go text Joe Maddon, which I did, but I have not heard back from him yet. So it's a good question, and it's the kind of thing that we kind of love to think about, but I don't have a good answer on that one yet, except for the fact that it can't be a DH going to pitch.
And we know Joe Maddon has thought this through for sure and knows what he's doing.
That's exactly what Jason said. Yes.
All right. Next question comes from Steven. Another Ohtani related question. He says, if the 2022 American League MVP race was once again coming down to Shohei Ohtani and Vlad Guerrero Jr., do you think that the writers will lean towards Vlad because Shohei has already won the award? Ohtani winning it in 2021, deservedly so, because he's a two-way player and a good one at that. It makes him a unicorn in today's game. But how long does that unicorn power guarantee you will win MVP? What if Ohtani has an incredible year hitting, but his ERA is up over five? How do you evaluate his MVP candidacy at that point?
Well, first of all, every year is different, and there are no makeup calls in the voting, at least the way I approach it, and I think almost every writer approaches it who votes on the awards. No one's saying, well, this guy won last year, so let's give this guy a break this year. No, it's pretty much based, more than ever, actually, on the performance of the player, on the statistics. Now, the interesting point you raise is Ohtani's candidacy if he is not excellent at both. Now, last year he was, it was easy. But if he has a year in which he doesn't pitch very well and has an offensive season, say like last year, which was MVP caliber, what do you do? And I don't have the answer to that, but certainly his case would not be as powerful if he struggled in one area. One of the things about last year that made it so easy in my mind was he was dominant in both areas. And my goodness, if he can do both in a dominant way, that's better than Vlad Guerrero Jr. doing one in a dominant way, as great as he was. So the scenario you raise is a really fascinating one. And for instance, how do you look at his WAR? Do you look at the offense subtracting the pitching because the pitching is not going to be good, the overall player? It's kind of confusing because WAR is not that way. You don't add and subtract hitting and pitching. That's not how we evaluate a player. You kind of do it separately. But all of these issues will come to the fore if indeed Ohtani has that kind of split personality year.
All right, next we go back to voicemail.
First time, long time here. So lifelong Guardians fan, 26 years old. Do you see the lack of action in free agency as ownership stinginess or an over-projection, over-reliance on the future prospects that they have in the organization? With a bunch of middle infield talent and even some outfield talent coming up, I'm interested in seeing if them not doing moves year over year is due to their stinginess or maybe they're projecting their prospects to be better than they are. Thanks, guys.
I'm not exactly sure of the answer, but it starts with them not being aggressive in the market and not wanting to spend. Now, they've been active on some of the major players this offseason, Matt Olson most prominently, and some others as well. But they haven't executed those trades or transactions of any kind, free agents, not in a big way. And does that reflect confidence in their young talent? Yes, but should they still be spending money to protect that young talent and make sure that young talent does not get rushed? Absolutely. And that is why when you look at a team like that, if their public posture is, and the Guardians have not said this, but if their public posture is, hey, we want to just leave room for our young kids, no. You can do both. You can have veterans, expensive veterans even, and still mix in young kids, and sometimes it enhances your team, actually often, to have those veterans to help groom those young kids and bring them forward. I look at any team that has signed Nelson Cruz in the last few years, that has been part of the motivation. So I hate to call a team cheap, but certainly it is fair to say the Guardians have not spent a whole lot of money. Now, maybe they get a Ramirez extension done, and that would be a happy day for Cleveland fans, no question about that. But I'm skeptical of that as well, and the bottom line is, I know that market has challenges. I understand that. We all do. But at the same time, we all have seen as well that all 30 teams, for the most part, are fully capable of spending more or spending in a way that should reflect a better investment in their product.
I feel like we've seen that team do it at times over the years here as they have been competitive. Yes. They made it to the World Series not that long ago. So, all right, next question is about the Cardinals. Hey, Ken, cannot tell you how excited I am for opening day and seeing Albert being introduced in presumably the opening day lineup for the Redbirds. My only concern about the Cardinals this year really is the lack of depth when it comes to pitching. I feel as though we'll be able to put up some good offensive numbers with the likes of O'Neill, Nolan, Goldie, and company. Before the lockout ended, there was talk about the Cardinals getting another experienced reliever in the likes of former Cardinal Joe Kelly or Ryan Tepera. Why do you think the organization didn't get either of those guys? And also, do you think that the bullpen and starting rotation is good enough to make it a run in the NL Central?
I would assume that in the cases of Kelly and Tepera, they were simply outbid. Kelly got a 2-year, $17 million deal from the White Sox. Tepera got a 2-year, $14 million deal from the Angels. So those are healthy contracts for those two pitchers. Now, the Cardinals did sign Nick Whitgren. Nick Whitgren's been a quality reliever at times in his career, but he got 1 year, $1.2 million. So yes, depth is a concern. There's no doubt about that, especially with Flaherty and Alex Reyes not going to start the season with the Major League Club. Those are two big pieces for them. What can you do to address that going forward? Hey, there are all kinds of things. There are people out there right now, pitchers out there right now, who are still available in free agency. I think of Yusmeiro Petit, free agent reliever who has been a quality reliever for many years now. I think of Johnny Cueto, who is out there and still a free agent. So there are ways that the Cardinals can upgrade immediately. They also can wait, take a deeper assessment of their club, kind of see where they are come June, July, and then hit the trade market. So pitching is a concern for every team right now. Pitching depth, it's a particular concern because of the shortened spring training, but at the same time, there are ways to address it, and I expect that the Cardinals, if they feel there is a need, clear need, and an opportunity, they'll jump.
They always seem to find a way to be in the race come September. All right, next question from Eric S. It's about the A's and kind of the mess out there in Oakland. It says, wondering if there is anything you've heard in MLB executive circles about the possibility of John Fisher either selling the A's or being pressured by Major League Baseball to sell the team. It's been over 15 years of Fisher trying to get a new stadium for the team while slashing payroll and irking fans in a myriad of different ways, and his tenure has been marked as a Titanic failure. Were it not for Billy Bean and David Force's magic, this team might be the worst in all of sports in both on and off the field. What will have to happen for the league to step in as they did in LA, New York, and Miami over the last decade?
Not simple incompetence and not just an unwillingness to spend money. If you remember with the Dodgers back in 2011, this is the best example of MLB stepping in to kind of force an ownership change. The Dodgers had, under Frank McCourt, their previous owner, some big-time financial problems. And MLB took control of the day-to-day operations of the team because it was concerned about their finances and the way the team was being run. That was in April of 11. Frank McCourt declared bankruptcy that June, and then the parties reached an agreement, MLB and the McCourt family, to sell the club in November. Now, the A's, yes, they are conducting themselves in a very parsimonious manner. You can look that word up if you want. And it's frustrating as heck. There's no doubt about that. But if we're going to remove owners on the basis of their unwillingness to spend money, I would suggest there are some other candidates as well in Pittsburgh and Miami and Baltimore and all kinds of places where there should be more money spent. Cleveland is another one. We just talked about them. So that's not going to do it. Ultimately, what has to happen with the A's short term, because Fisher is going to remain the owner, is that they have to get a new ballpark, and at some point, that has to change the equation for them. Now, we're talking here on Sunday afternoon. They've just traded Sean Manaea. Their payroll is down below $50 million when you include all other expenses that are associated with payroll. The cash payroll itself, I've seen reports this morning, it's in the 30s. That's embarrassing. That's terrible. And it should never happen in this sport. So would I like to see MLB step in? Yeah, I would kind of like to see MLB slap a lot of these teams on the wrist. But they have taken no action against any of those clubs. They're revenue-sharing recipients. They do very well. The A's are getting phased back into revenue-sharing. They were phased out last year. There's no excuse. But at the same time, I don't expect the league to act.
All right, and one final question. This is a long one, Ken, but it is a voicemail. It was well thought out, so I left it in its entirety, didn't edit it too much. So here is Chris talking about the Marcell Ozuna situation in Atlanta.
Hey, Ken. Chris in Cumming, Georgia. Love the show. It's a must listen every week. I'm coming to you today in regard to the Marcell Ozuna situation with the Braves. I don't think there's been much discussion about the cloud over his head as it relates to the domestic violence charge that has now been settled outside of court with a agreement, as I understand, where he's free and clear to play. Shortly after this event occurred with his now wife, as I understand it, there was unanimous agreement, if you will, in the Braves world that Marcell Ozuna would likely never put on a Braves uniform again. Is this, in your opinion, a public relations black eye for a franchise, the Braves, that purports to hold themselves to a different standard than the rest of Major League Baseball teams? I'm interested in your thoughts on the Braves clubhouse culture. You hit on this in one of your recent mailbags, I think. You've got Marcell Ozuna back, and you've got Freddie Freeman gone. Obviously, there's reasons for those, most of them money, but I'd like to get your thoughts on that factor within the Braves clubhouse. Lastly, I'd like to know, as a writer, when you go into a major league clubhouse, what is it like bringing up a topic as sensitive as this when you approach a player like Ozuna? Is this just something you know not to bring up? What about his teammates? Are these just issues you just stay away from? Or are these kind of behind closed doors, off the record conversations? I would imagine it's a very difficult thing to ask about as a writer when you go into a clubhouse. So I'd love to get your take on these. Thank you very much.
Wow. Chris, these are all good questions, every one of them, and I will take them one by one. Let's start with the public relations black eye. And you're right. Anytime a team keeps a player who is suspended for violating baseball's joint domestic violence policy, it is something of a black eye. There's no question about it. And you can talk about your standards and your morals and all of this, and then when you do that, you keep a player like that, it raises the question. Now, Marcell Ozuna is owed $52 million, $53 million over the next 4 years. I would believe that's influencing the Braves' decision here. They don't want to simply swallow $53 million. And also, they can make the case, and fairly, in my opinion, that he has been punished by Major League Baseball. He is now a member back in good standing of Major League Baseball, and I'll go through that. He was suspended 20 games retroactively from last season. Remember, he went on administrative leave September 10th, and he served that until the end of the regular season. That now is unpaid. They take that money away, and that is where his suspension is. Now, in addition to all that, this is away from baseball. He completed a pretrial diversion program, then an intervention program, including an anger management course. And my understanding is that because he did all that, the misdemeanor charges of family violence, battery, and simple assault were dropped. So from a legal standpoint, from a baseball standpoint, he is perfectly free to play. And the Braves owe him all this money. They can rightly say, hey, he's done his time. He is now back in baseball in good standing. We have no problem with him being on our team. That is not an unreasonable position. Okay? I don't believe necessarily that every person suspended for violating the domestic violence policy should simply be cut. That's not how the policy works. In fact, domestic violence experts will tell you taking a person's income away is not the way to address this necessarily. So I'm no expert on this, but I'm just trying to give you the perspective of the team and the league and the union, for that matter, on this particular thing. Now, you also ask about the Braves culture with Ozuna back. Now, this is something that has not been really talked about much. Ozuna is a popular player among his teammates. They like him. He's a very gregarious guy, outgoing, always smiling. I don't expect that to be a problem with them going forward at all. Now, I did write, I believe it was earlier this week, about the potential for Braves' internal dynamics being kind of interesting. And I said they bear watching. Now, the reason I said that is because they've got five guys going to arbitration coming off a World Series title. And they just paid a player, $168 million, Matt Olson, they guaranteed him that, when he has yet to put on the uniform. Now, Braves fans reacted to this. Maybe they were just reacting to a tweet by The Athletic that didn't fully give the context, but Braves fans were like, we're going to be fine, we're good. I actually believe they're going to be good. But I also believe every one of those fans who tweeted at me complaining about what I wrote, saying I didn't know what I was talking about, if somebody was brought into their workplace making a whole lot more money than everybody else, and then you had salary disputes going on with five other guys or women, that would maybe cause some questions. Try to put yourself in that position. That's what I'm talking about. Now, I don't believe they're going to have an issue. That's a pretty good clubhouse for the most part. And even without Freddie there, they're going to react and they're going to adapt. They'll be fine. Snitker holds them together. Alex Anthopoulos does communicate well with his players. They're not going to always agree with him. That's fine. That's the way it is. But at the same time, what I wrote is that their internal dynamics bear watching, and I certainly believe their internal dynamics bear watching. Now, finally, to the last question about whether a reporter like myself would talk to Marcell Ozuna about this kind of situation that he was in. No one is afraid. And in fact, Ozuna addressed this with reporters as soon as he got to camp. He first apologized to the team privately, and then he talked to reporters and explained that he felt horribly about it and said pretty much what you would expect, but the right things to say. From that point on, I don't know that you go back to him unless there's a reason to go back to him and bring it up again. There is certainly every opportunity for reporters to do that. And I would imagine that maybe he would even talk about it with someone he might know and want to explain further. But it's not something where we just keep pounding guys for. He gave his explanation. I don't know that there's going to be a better explanation coming. You could ask deeper questions, perhaps, and try to get at it. I don't know that he's going to answer. But in terms of reporters being afraid or reluctant to approach players in the clubhouse about any issue, that's not the case.
Yeah, certainly for good reporters, right? there's probably some that may be a little nervous.
That's
about
true,
that,
Tim. But, yeah, that's but very good point.
Ones. The good ones are gonna be able to get past that. All right, that's all the questions. Let's do some predictions, quick, Ken. Let's do division winners first, and we can move quickly through this. Then we'll do wild cards. Then we'll say who's gonna beat who in the World Series. That work for you?
That works for me.
All right, you get to start. By the way,
all right. I'm gonna preface
division winners. Go ahead.
I'm going to preface what I say by saying my predictions are annually perhaps the worst of anyone covering baseball. They stink. I'm terrible at predicting. I shouldn't even do it. I hate even being asked to do it. And you know why? Actually, there's a serious reason for that. We don't know who's getting hurt. We don't know who's getting traded. We're going on the basis of what the sport looks like on this particular day, and we know things are going to change. That said, Tim, I'll do it.
Because no one's going to remember this, Ken. Don't worry about
it. Well, no one will have it on tape or anything.
No.
All right. National League East, Atlanta. Central, Milwaukee. West, L.A. AL East, this might be my most surprising pick, Tampa Bay. And then in the Central, the White Sox. In the West, Houston. My wild cards, three in each league, remember. The Mets, the Giants, the Padres. I think they'll somehow get in there. And then in the American League, the Blue Jays, the Red Sox, and the Mariners. And you might ask, where are the Yankees?
Mariners.
I have them missing. My World Series is, well, this prediction might get me fired from Fox, but I'm going to make it anyway. It's a small market festival. The Brewers over the Rays. That's it.
Wow, Brewers over the Rays. Well, that's going to make Derek Van Riper, a host here on the feed, very happy, as he is a big Brewers fan, went to the University of Wisconsin and loves that team. All right, here's mine, and we are a lot of similarities, but some differences. National League division's exactly the same. Braves, Brewers, Dodgers, wild cards in the National League, Padres, Mets. I go Cardinals instead of Giants. American League, Blue Jays I have winning the East, White Sox and Astros, just like you. And then for the wild card, I actually have Yankees and Red Sox both getting in. And the Twins, I feel like everything went against them last year, so karma's going to catch up. They'll be better this year, and they sneak in. And the Rays don't make the playoffs in the American League, according to me. And then the World Series, I have, this should make your friends at Fox a little happier, Ken. I have Blue Jays Blue Jays over the Dodgers. So not only big markets, but multiple countries bringing the viewership to the World Series on Fox. So that's what I got.
Actually, Tim, I have to correct you here. The Blue Jays are a Fox nightmare. Because there are no ratings
Canada. Right. Doesn't count.
Yeah, we won't get a benefit at Fox from them. Now, I say that not totally in jest, but listen, if the Blue Jays and whoever play a great seven-game World Series, everybody's going to be happy.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. But yeah, it's like a black hole when the Blue Jays
are a black hole, yes.
From a rating standpoint. All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Mailbag. Next up on the feed, a good one coming up on Tuesday, Theo Epstein making his return to Starkville. He was on a year ago, the first ever Starkville as part of the Athletic Baseball Show. And Jason and Doug have convinced him to come back. I'm sure they'll be talking about all the new rules, second base moving in the minors, all the stuff that's going on. We also have you covered at The Athletic on the written side, staff predictions, all of the staff predictions, not just ours here, coming out Monday afternoon. So check that out on The Athletic. Team previews on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. East on Monday, Central Tuesday, West on Wednesday. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Ken has a huge season preview coming out on Wednesday. So check out all of that, and you can do it for just $1 per month for 6 months right now. Great deal we're running at The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/baseball show. Ken, next time we talk, the season will be underway. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, Tim. Can't wait. And happy opening day to everyone in advance.
Have a great week, everyone.